Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. Why would you spend $50,000 on remote sensing cameras when you've got Dr. Craig Coburn on staff? As people at the University of Lethbridge know very well, just give Craig some duct tape, a few bucks, and in no time he'll whip up a working gizmo to fit your research needs. And iCor is delving into the distance learning market with the launch of a new research chair in multimedia. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. A lot of our scientific and environmental research today depends on the images taken by satellites or infrared cameras mounted on airplanes. The equipment involved is very expensive. So it's no wonder the University of Lethbridge is fortunate to have Dr. Craig Coburn on staff. This assistant professor of geography is also an inventor of sorts, and he's very adept at the use of duct tape. The last time I spoke with Craig, he had just finished jerry-rigging a goniometer out of $200 worth of plywood and duct tape. Now, goniometers usually run at about $500,000. Well, Craig has done it again with his latest contraption.
Well, Cheryl, my latest bit of development is I've crafted a remote sensing system that works with 6 video cameras, and we strap that to the side of a plane, and we're off gathering our own imagery to, in this case, in the project that we're going to discuss today, assess riparian health.
Now, what have you made this new one out of?
Well, it's a series of old surveillance cameras. So they're infrared-sensitive cameras, which will become very important later on in our discussion. But they're video cameras that I actually bought off eBay. eBay is wonderful for scientists if you can figure out how to make it work. And combine that with a home-built computer, and we've got that mounted inside an airplane, and we go out and we gather our own data.
What about the duct tape?
Well, there's always something. There's a little bit of duct tape in the system, as always, but there's lots of bungee cords, and we store the whole thing in an old milk crate that rides in the where the passenger seat should go in the airplane. Being creative is part of the process. Yeah.
And what was the price tag on that?
Well, mostly these systems would run you sort of $50,000, and I think I managed to put this one under about $5,000. So less money is always a good thing when you're trying to make your research dollars go as far as you can. And in this case, what we're interested in is getting imagery that has very good spectral sensitivity, so it's able to distinguish the different colors, if you like, on Earth very accurately. And these cameras were perfect for that job. And I got them very inexpensively, so we're quite happy with that development.
Now, what exactly are you doing?
Well, the project that the system is currently involved with right now is doing riparian cottonwood forest health assessment. So these are very sensitive environments within Alberta. So if you travel down across the prairie and you don't see very many trees, and suddenly you go down into the valley and, wow, there they are. They're predominantly cottonwoods, which are sort of a poplar species, and the trees grow in proximity to the water that's available there, right beside them, from flowing in the river. And we find that essentially we can measure the health of these forests with remote sensing. At least that's what the project is trying to assess, is whether or not we can measure the health of the forest, because many of the rivers that we have in southern Alberta are dammed and flow controlled, and if we can evaluate how we're doing on the flow control and the regulation of the rivers, then we can assess the health conditions in these areas to see how we're doing. If things aren't going well, then the first kind of the canary in the coal mine, the indicator species there, are the cottonwoods, and they tend to die back. So when we find that the tree's health status is decreasing, so it's not doing as well, then past research, especially by Dr. Stuart Rood here at the university, has been able to advise dam operators to release a little bit more water down the river and help out these very important ecosystems.
What exactly have you found so far?
Well, we just began the remote sensing component of the project. It's just recently been funded by the Alberta Center for Water Research. So this the project began in earnest this fall, and we went out and we've done some ground-based remote sensing, as well as had the airborne system up. And so far, I mean, the primary problem with remote sensing of forests, trees, and other things, which is where my experience comes in, is that trees are green. And it's very difficult to tell a different species apart, let alone, you know, different species that are very similar. So in this case, we're looking at deciduous trees. Well, deciduous trees kind of look like deciduous trees. But what we found is that, again, through the work of Dr. Stuart Rood here at the university, that these trees actually have different patterns of senescence. So they tend to slow down in the fall at different rates, if you like. So we've been able to actually, we've got some remotely sensed imagery that shows us this pattern of senescence, and it will allow us to determine, we hope, which species are where and how well they're doing.
So how does that actually show up on the imagery then, the difference between them?
Well, if we took a summer imagery in these environments, we wouldn't really find much difference. And that's been the problem, that if we have certain kinds of cottonwoods in certain areas, we just can't tell them apart. They're green. And it, within the infrared, which is the area that I'm most interested in, they're very high reflectors, so they've got a good signal. But we can't tell them apart. And we need to be able to tell the different species apart in order to assess the environmental dynamics of the system. Now, what happens in the fall is these things start to senesce at different times. So what happens is all summer, they look the same. We can't tell them apart. And then the fall comes around, and some of them turn yellow sooner than others. And they do that, and it's a species difference. It has little to do with, I mean, it has some things to do with, in this case, the overall health and how stressed the tree is. But generally, this is a seasonal indicator, and some trees senesce earlier, some senesce later. So we notice that they essentially turn yellow, and they decrease their infrared reflectance earlier than other tree species. So this is the first time this kind of research has been done. It's ecologically significant, and the time frames are very short. So we're trying to. So it's one of those perfect applications for airborne remote sensing, because you just simply can't do it from a satellite. You could not be assured that you'd have a satellite instrument overhead at the right time with the right conditions to catch a period of a sensing window that may only be 2 or 3 weeks in length.
Now, how might you apply this to other areas?
Well, the areas that we're covering right now cover most of southern Alberta. So we're doing the Old Man and the St. Mary River. We're also extending this up to the Red Deer River. So we're carrying it on. And if we could find, for example, that we could do deciduous tree species distinction via senescent signature, this is new and innovative research taking place in Alberta. This is not normally done. For the most part, in remote sensing, when we're doing forests, we are interested in sort of the summer peak, right? So we're interested in that peak of reflectance. And we've had a very difficult time trying to determine one tree species from the next. And getting some idea of the species composition of a forest, especially a deciduous mixed forest like the boreal forest in Canada, will be very important in terms of doing things like determining carbon stocks and trying to figure out the overall ecological dynamics of those areas. So how would they change, say, for example, in response to climate change? So you can take little studies like this one and then scale them up. So you're going to look at seasonal variation within one very controlled environment, our riparian zones, and they are controlled because the water that's flowing down the river is not natural. It's been dammed and then is released. And then you can compare that, say, overall to a climate change signature. Or we could assess the biomass that's there present in a tree, because different trees accumulate biomass in different ways. The problem is we can't, from a remote mechanism, determine with a high degree of accuracy which trees where. So with this kind of new innovation, we'll be able to, we hope, scale these studies up to start looking at broader perspectives for the use of remotely sensed data to help us do things like determine, you know, ecological diversity, carbon stocks, and overall impacts of climate variability.
Now that works for trees. Do you have any idea if you could use it on other subjects?
Well, we do also have an interest right now. I've got a project that's funded by the PFRA to go out and try to evaluate whether or not their people in certain areas are implementing best management practices for cattle herds. So one of the things we're doing is trying to see whether or not cows are by the river in the wintertime. So this is another thing that we've got our airborne remote sensing system doing. So we wait for a good snowfall, which is becoming less prevalent these days in Alberta. And then we go off and we fly over top of areas of interest, so zones that we know we have problems in, and we go and look for cattle that are impacting the riparian zone. So we know that it's fine to have cows down by the river. It's just not fine to have them in the river or to have them in these areas too long, because they tend to clear out the zones and leave them denuded of vegetation, which is very important for the stream health and general conditions of the water. So we're interested in those sorts of things. And again, that's another sort of interesting project that we're out doing. So we'll be flying over you sometime this winter, checking to see if your cows are in the water. Now, we're not doing it to spy on people. In fact, we're doing this in conjunction with the PFRA so that they can go out and help the producers to implement best management practices.
It's amazing what you can do with a little bit of duct tape, eh?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Craig.
All right, thank you.
That was Dr. Craig Coburn, an assistant professor in geography at the University of Lethbridge. ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, has launched another research chair at the University of Alberta. And through the work of Dr. Anoop Basu, it will greatly advance the field of online and distance learning. Dr. Randy Gable is the president and CEO of ICOR.
This research chair is about exploiting some of the leading edge research in capturing and deploying media, for example, 4D video, in a way that makes it accessible in all content delivery methods. So whether you've got a slow line in Peace River, or you've got a fast line sitting at the University of Alberta. So it's a way of trying to use the modern technologies to deliver content in a way that's independent of the way it's carried.
Now, online learning, how does that fit in with ICOR's goals?
ICOR's goals are just to be able to do research that supports any kind of activity that gets delivered to the public. So whether it's delivering sensor networks for environmental monitoring, or networks of media delivery for online education. For us, it doesn't matter. It's the application of the results of the research. So this is just a novel and nice one.
What does Dr. Basu's research bring to this whole field?
Dr. Basu has about 30 years of history of working on highly technical aspects of, for example, image, video compression, image interpretation, applying machine learning to understanding imaging. And what he's doing is he's found a partner with Castle Rock Research that can lead areas where that can be exploited. So, for example, the delivery of content to K-12 in remote areas can take advantage and provide the problems that the solutions we work for in a research lab can be applied. So it's kind of that kind of partnership.
Thank you very much, Randy.
Oh, you're welcome, as always.
That was Dr. Randy Gable, President and CEO of iCor. The industry partner involved in this new iCor chair is Castle Rock Research. The company's president is Gautam Rao, and Gautam has committed $100,000 a year over the next 5 years to help support the research of Dr. Anup Basu. I asked Gautam about his business, Castle Rock.
Our focus is building resources, both print and digital, to support assessment and assessment strategies across North America.
How did you get involved in that?
I got involved one day, myself and a friend of mine, we're having lunch, and we're talking about what we would want to do if we had a chance of doing anything in the whole world. And I told him I wanted to help little children in mathematics. The next day, I decided to leave my job and start this company.
Now, your name is also on the title of this new research chair. How did that come about?
Just good luck, I guess. And I want to put my name, my family's name, on the research chair. I thought I'd have more lasting in honor of my father, so I was able to make a commitment to the university, to Dr. Basu, to iCor, and they were kind enough to have me showcase as one of the people on this research chair.
Now, with this research chair, what are you hoping to achieve?
There's three things. Number one, I wanted to give back to university. I graduated from here, and my father was a professor here. Number two, I wanted to invest resources in the area of research as it connected to my core business, not just for today, but into the years ahead. And finally, I wanted the fruits of the labor to help change society with respect to assessment and assessment strategies.
Now, Dr. Basu's research, how is that going to fill your goals?
My hope is Dr. Basu, his wife, Dr. Chang, and the students will each play a small part in identifying different innovative item formats that we can mass produce and provide children far more engaging ways to study and to be assessed.
What makes online learning so important now?
The future of education, as we're already seeing it, will be moving more and more towards online learning, towards mobile learning. And resources built to support that future vision will be well embraced. Companies like myself, although we're a very small company, that is able to think through those ideas today, will differentiate ourselves in a time 4 or 5 years from now when many companies are trying to enter this field.
And one of the things that Dr. Basu talked about in his speech with regard to the launch of the chair is he hopes that he's going to have an impact not just locally, but globally. What would be that global impact?
Very good question. There's a famous thing called the $100 computer. And the $100 computer is being built in places like China and Taiwan, and they're being sold in lots of 1 million units. So countries, Nigeria, South America, various countries within South America, are buying 1 million units of $100 computers to give to every child in the country. Those children, those little mobile learning devices, is all they will have. And to have volumes of high-quality content on those mobile devices to help them pedagogically and in terms of assessment will be what we can do globally.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Cheryl.
That was Gautam Rao, president of Castle Rock Research in Edmonton. The man actually holding the ICOR Gautam Rao Industry Research Chair in Multimedia is Dr. Anoop Basu. Anoop is a professor of computing sciences at the University of Alberta.
Yeah, basically, we want to have multimedia adaptive testing with innovative item formats, which are totally different from multiple choice type of formats. And by multimedia, we want to bring in 3D graphics, video, audio, and other media to help people be more engaged when they're taking tests and also they're learning in the process. And at the same time, we want to deliver this content worldwide, globally, to any remote communities. And so we'd be looking into robust, high-stakes delivery over wireless networks.
What would make this different from what's available right now?
We incorporate perceptual factors into account. So we take how people see it and judge things into account. So perceptual quality is one of our highlights in our research. And this is totally different from other approaches, which simply compute some kind of numbers based on differences between images, for example, to judge what is good, what is bad.
Now, does it make a difference where the receiver is in the end? Does it matter if you're in Edmonton or if you're up in northern Alberta? Are there technical problems that have to be overcome?
So that's what we are trying to address. So we have already done research on what happens when you have packet loss. So when you lose part of the information, can we transmit information in such a way that things are still robust? So things degrade in a graceful manner. Obviously, if you lose 100% of the information, you won't see anything. But if you're losing only 50% of the information, we still should be able to present things to you in a way that is perceptually acceptable, and people can still respond to that.
Now, in your speech earlier, you mentioned something about being able to do these educational tests over the cell phone. How would that work?
So, because we are developing things over a wireless, we are developing our algorithms that work over wireless media, there is no reason it won't work over a cell phone. And more and more, you see people are playing games over cell phones. They are basically talking all the time on the cell phone. So they are way more handy, the younger generation. Their fingers, I don't know, they're probably not as big as ours. They can handle small things much better. And to expect people to always like carry laptops or have a computer wherever they're learning or getting tested is probably not the way to go in the long term, because then we reduce accessibility. And cell phones are very cheap compared to guns and things that seems like everybody has in many parts of the world. And so we hope that others will join in our venture and maybe make cell phones available to many kids in a remote community so that they can participate. So whereas making computers available may be a much more expensive process or undertaking.
Now, this using them over the cell phones, does this change the way that you can actually do testing?
Of course. We have to look into what is the size of the display. And we have to look into packet loss, as I mentioned earlier. And so those are factors that oftentimes people don't even think about nowadays. And then we also have to think about authentication. So maybe we have a camera now, are always there on the cell phone. So you can see the student and you can verify that it's not somebody else doing the test. So those would be the things that would be very challenging compared to what we have today. So today we have basically computers sitting in classrooms, and there is an instructor there who is monitoring everything. And so that's the environment. From there to go to a very free environment for learning and testing is quite different and quite challenging.
Well, it seems like this video game generation is really changing the way we approach everything.
Yeah, that's true. And so we better do things based on what they're interested in. Otherwise, they may be dropping out of the classes. And so we may be spending a lot of money on education, but if it doesn't have the effect of retaining people, getting them interested, and making them involved and they want to learn more, then we would have failed in the process.
You have quite an emphasis as well on dealing with the global market, as it were, for education. What is your goal there?
You can see nowadays we spend a lot of money on intervention programs. And simple things like K-12 education, for example, at the very basic level, we should be able to afford that at a global level. Governments should get together and be able to afford that and say this should be like a global human right. We talk about democracy, but if 99% of the people don't know what is democracy versus communism, how do we expect them to make a choice? We're always forcing things on people. So by education, we can do a lot more, because if you think about simply AIDS education, it can help a lot more and be a lot more effective than treatment, because the cost for treating one person who is not educated and takes has risky behavior is probably 100 times higher than training 100 people, and or maybe 1,000 people. The cost of training 1,000 people would be the same as the cost of treating one person. And you can see that social misunderstandings, lack of collaboration between people is creating lots of wars and stuff, and we don't even know why we are fighting some of them. But people are spending billions of dollars. So definitely we should be spending a lot more on the education side, because with 1 million you can only go so far. And so we need a lot more and a lot more people involved.
How do you introduce this technology, though, into parts of the world where people are still struggling just to get food and water?
Maybe part of the problem in getting food and water is that people don't even know what are the tools they can use to create food and water in many parts. And also with education, they can be more productive. They can develop things. Their economy will be improving with the education. And so it should go hand in hand. It cannot be that we first must do this and then that. Education should almost be the first thing and should go hand in hand with everything. And that has impact on their economies, on what they can earn for a living, on how they better their environment and so on. So I don't think this can be decoupled at all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
That was Dr. Anoop Basu, a professor of computing sciences at the University of Alberta. I spoke with him at the launch of his new chair, the ICOR Gautam Rao Industry Research Chair in Multimedia. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our e-newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the University of Lethbridge, ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, Calgary Technologies, Inc., Alberta Heritage Foundation for Medical Research, Alberta Innovation and Science, Alberta Gaming Research Institute, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Alberta Ingenuity, Alberta Research Council, Alberta Conservation Association, and the NSERC Industrial Chair in Integrated Landscape Management. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Crocher.